White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 465.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins!
Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with TheWarEagleReader.com and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family. You are our Patreon.com family through all this weird time we're going through right now. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we're back. We've kind of transitioned from being able to talk about current events, more or less, to reliving some of the glory days of the past, and this week is no exception. Before we get into things, just tell the folks that are just tuning in, what's our topic tonight?
Tonight, we are going to discuss the 2005 Iron Bowl.
Better known as?
Honk if you sack Brody Croyle.
I was just telling my wife, I said, you know why Stanley McClover always has trouble with his horn in his car? And she's like, no. I said, because he wears it out every time he sees that bumper sticker. Every time he sees that bumper sticker, he's like, bah, 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 bah. So, yeah. So we're going to talk about the 2005 game. And just like we did, if you haven't been listening, folks, lately, 2 or 3 weeks ago, we started out with the 2009 West Virginia rain monsoon game, as some people have called it. And that was a fun conversation. We just kind of went through it like it just happened over the weekend. And then last weekend, we went through the 1994 LSU interception game. It's funny how each of these games we're looking at kind of has a nickname. We always nickname some of our greatest wins. So this week, we're going to do the 2005 Iron Bowl played in Auburn. And this will be 2 out of 3 that I was actually in attendance for. I was not at the West Virginia game because 2009 was after I had moved up here and only really get to see 1 or 2 a year. But I was definitely at the interception game in 94, and I was definitely at this Iron Bowl, the 2005 Iron Bowl. So I can give you – I don't think you were at this one, were you? Or were you?
I think I was.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, I feel like I was.
Cool. Okay, well, then we have some first – we both have some firsthand observations as well. That's cool. So before we get into all that, how are things going on your end of the old internet there, John?
They're going fine. We're staying safe and healthy and being careful and, you know, doing the best we can like everybody else. And but it's helped that the weather's been beautiful recently, so I got to work out in the yard some. And and then, like today, even I took the laptop out of the back porch and worked out there. It was great.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, we've had our weather has been really weird. It'll be in the mid 70s for a day or two, and then it'll be back in the 40s or 50s for a couple of days, and then it's like rained hard all day today, all afternoon. So I've kind of had to pick and choose my moments to do things outside, but I've definitely tried to get outside more than I probably normally would in my normal routine, just because I'm here, you know. And so I took our sort of freestanding hammock outside a few days and pitched back in it and read or worked on our book or whatever. And then I've set up a cool Auburn folding chair thing out in the front on the front patio that I can go out there when the sun's in the backyard and just get some fresh air. I've been riding my little scooter around the neighborhood. And I was telling John before we went on the show that because my daughter works in a restaurant type place, it's a stakeout type place where they deliver food. They have all these potatoes, and so they had surplus potatoes, and so we bought an entire box of beautiful giant potatoes, 70 potatoes for $2, which is an insane amount of money to pay for.
That's ridiculous.
I know, isn't it crazy? And so we've been giving them away and everything, but we also been eating them. And We're running out of recipes for potatoes. We've done pretty much everything at this point. But I tell you, you know you're trying to find entertainment to keep yourself from losing your mind when you're just like finding every possible way to use a potato. But we have, so. I guess in our coming weeks, we have some more games like this in mind. And then, of course, as we get into the summer, we'll know more about the upcoming season, because we've still, you know, we have to do the barbecue shows, for example, the previews and everything, but we can't really do them if they're not even going to play until December or January or spring or something crazy. So I guess we're just going to play it by ear, huh?
Yep. Wait and see what happens. We should know more in early June, I think, about football.
Cool, yeah. So get through May, and man, I tell you, I would trade about 30 potatoes right now for a haircut. That's the one thing. The one thing I want is a haircut. It's a good thing we're not doing this on Wishbone TV, because have to go put my baseball hat on. All right. Well, why don't you give our little introduction about what we're doing? I mean, we talked about that we're covering these classic games, but explain to the folks what's up with that.
Well, so we started this podcast in 2012. And so part of the idea is to provide some enjoyable content for people, and something that you and I would do anyhow, watch old games and talk about it. Mm-hmm. But also, it's games before we started the podcast, so we haven't covered them or talked about them before. And I think we want to pick important historical games and talk about not just the games themselves, but kind of what they meant, kind of the meta around them and the story around those games, but also kind of the games themselves and the impact of them on that team, the season, the fans. And so that's what we're doing. And we, as you said, we did the West Virginia game, which kind of led into the LSU game because of the interceptions at the end. And then now we're doing the 2005 Alabama game, which, you know, again, the LSU game kind of leads into this because of great defensive performance, I think. And so it's a fun game to talk about. And so we'll start it off, I think, and Van is going to talk to us about who was the 2005 Auburn team. Like, what was this team? We know about 2004, but who was the 2005 team?
It is interesting. It is an interesting team, the 2005 Auburn team. It's a team that, you know, it's kind of funny where we when the 2004 season ended and we didn't get in the Sugar Bowl, I mean, we didn't get to play for the national championship because we were third, and obviously the top two teams never lost. It reminded me a lot of after 1993 when people said, well, just to run the table again, and then they can't deny us, right? And I remember in 1993 thinking, there's no way we're going to run the table again. And we almost did to the very end, but there's no way. And it was the same thing here. I'm like, you know, people that are bright-eyed, optimistic fans were like, well, we'll just go out and go undefeated again in 2005. And I'm thinking, You can't lose Jason Campbell, Cadillac Williams, Ronnie Brown, Carlos Rogers, and just go out and go undefeated again. That just, you know, the strongest program in history playing in, like, you know, like if it was Nebraska in the mid 90s playing in the Big 8 or the Big 12 or whatever, even they were hard pressed to do that, playing Kansas and Kansas State every week. So it's just tough. But this was still I like to think of the 2005 team as sort of not the remnants, but this was what was left when you skimmed off that upper crust of 2004 and you still had a dang good core of a team there. And, you know, you just had to replace the quarterback, that's all, and replace the starting running back, that's all. But other than that, you know, we had our offensive line pretty much back. We had our special teams pretty much back. We had our defense. In fact, we even added Stanley McClover for 1 year to the defense, and we had Travis Williams back and everybody. But the real strength of this team, at least on offense, was that Brandon Cox, who'd been around for 17 years at this point already, stepped in to be the starter for the first time. And in addition to settling on Kenny Irons as the sort of the Brent Fullwood-style workhorse running back for this team behind Jake Slaughter at fullback, we also had this is the year that our great 2002 receiving class were seniors. With the exception of Courtney Taylor, that's why he redshirted in 2002. So we had Courtney Taylor was a junior, but they were all the same. They all came in the same year, though, 2002. So you had Courtney Taylor as a junior, Ben Obamanu and Devin Aromashadu, And then Cooper Wallace at tight end. And then I think Anthony Mix was on the team too. So you had the real strength of this team, particularly on offense. They had a good offensive line, but they had such good receivers, and Cox was such an accurate pass. He didn't have a huge arm like like Jason Campbell, but he was very accurate. And so he could just kind of zip the ball all around the near middle of the field ahead of him. And then you had Irons to kind of be the workhorse when we had to run the ball. But on defense, though, we had a really good defensive line this year because you add Stanley McClover, who I guess only played 1 year, but you add him to Marquise Gunn, Tommy Jackson, Octavius Balcom, Tez Doolittle, Quentin Groves, Sendarick Marks, Andrew McCain. I mean, you know, and then you had Caribe Didi and Terrius Williams back there with T-Will. This, and of course, in the secondary, David Irons, Jonathan Wilhite, Eric Brock, Will Herring. There's going to be some name checks from them, yeah. So this was just a really solid. It wasn't 2004, but it wasn't as big a step down from 2004 as certainly I was afraid it would be.
Agree 100%. And they also, like, it started out poorly. Mm-hmm. With that Georgia Tech game, but the big switch was going to Irons at tailback.
Yes.
That he kind of ignited the offense and allowed the running game to take off, and that took the pressure off the passing game and allowed them to do better.
Yeah, he had transferred in from South Carolina, and his brother was playing for our defense too, so he had the two brothers playing. And he didn't – it's one of those deals where he didn't start – in the first game playing Georgia Tech, and they put Trey Smith back there, and I was thinking, you know, we kind of caught Alabama by surprise with Trey Smith at tailback in 2002, but he wasn't like an every down between the tackles guy. You know, we ran some little quick slippery plays with him, and so the thought that he was going to be our starting tailback and we're going to hammer away at defenses with Trey Smith, the snowboarder, just never seemed accurate to me. And we lost to Georgia Tech, not because of that, but that certainly was part of the problem. And so when they switched over, I got the sense that Kenny Irons really hadn't like learned the blocking schemes or something to the satisfaction of our running backs coach and maybe Borges and Tuberville. And I think they finally just said, screw it, put him in there. We got to have some offense from the running game. And it made all the difference in the world.
I think you're right. I remember that. I'll never forget that LSU game with him.
So. Oh, yeah. 200 yards, right? At least. Mm-hmm. So what about Alabama?
So the 2005 Alabama team, again, this is pre-Saban Alabama. They were 10-2. They had lost, but they had been 10-0. They lost the week before our game to LSU in overtime, 16-13.
Yeah.
They were a very strong defensive team and a kind of very mediocre offensive team. And the defense was actually number one in the country in scoring defense, and one of the top, and basically in the top 10 in every category, rushing defense and all that kind of stuff. This was a defense that had D'Amico Ryans and Roman Harper and Gilberry and you know, a few other guys like that. Offensively, they weren't very strong. And Brody Croyle, obviously, is a quarterback. We're going to talk about him. Ken Darby was the running back. Mm-hmm. And they had DJ Hall and Keith Brown. They had Tim Castillo was the backup tailback that came in and, ran the short yardage stuff. So, they had some decent players, but it's funny looking at the offensive talent of this team versus later Alabama teams. It's not great.
Yeah. Especially on the offensive line.
Yes. And so the big story coming into the game is we had seen against LSU that they had real problems on the offensive line. They couldn't block LSU's pass rushers, and our pass rushers were better than LSU's.
Yeah.
So I felt very confident going into the game that we could get pressure on them. That could lead to us getting them in bad field position and us getting good field position to help our offense against their defense, and that's kind of what happened.
That is what happened, yeah, no kidding. And it really worked out. This is a very weird game. I mean, going back and watching it, I said this last week and I'll say it again now. when you only watched like the little 10-minute highlight videos on YouTube or whatever of these games, you get the sense, both in the LSU game and in this game, of that's you get a sense of the game that I think is very distorted. Because the way this game played out was, we just got them in a hole in the first quarter and just beat their brains in every chance we got in the first quarter. And then they kind of righted the ship in the second quarter to a certain degree. But by then, they were just in a bigger hole than we were in the 2010 game. You know, there was no coming back. And I mean, you know, I've always looked at this game and cursed it in my memory and said, dang it, why didn't Tuberville run up the score? We should have won 84-0 or something, you know. It shouldn't have been 28-18. It should have been like 80-0. But when you watch the game and you don't just watch the highlights, you actually watch the second quarter, you watch the third quarter, you watch the fourth quarter. By the fourth quarter, John, I'm sitting there thinking, man, I'm glad we got that big lead in the, when everything broke our way in the first quarter. Because if that first quarter hadn't happened the way it had, this would have been a close game, and I'm not sure we would have won.
Oh, yes. No, it was it really when it started. I'm glad the game ended when it did and didn't go on for a fifth quarter.
Yeah.
In trouble.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're onside kicking at the end. I mean, but yeah, I mean, their defense in the second, third, and fourth quarters was every bit as good as ours. They didn't get the sacks that we did, but they shut down the running game until well into the fourth quarter. We couldn't get anything going on offense after the first quarter. Now, part of that might be the Tubber shell, right? That Tuberville kind of got more conservative. But, you know, I think that he saw he needed to do some things to try to get to keep the defense off the field. You know, you can't just get up a 28 to 7 lead and then just start punting every four plays. That's a good way to lose, you know, very quickly.
Yes.
So, well, and I also was going to mention that this game turned out to be kind of the opposite of the LSU game in terms of, you know, we tend to skip the first three quarters of that LSU game and just watch the fourth, which is where all the crazy stuff happens. With this one, you watch the first quarter, and then you can pretty much skip all the way to the end, you know. So it's both of these games had that one quarter that kind of blows your mind, and then three quarters is just kind of sludge, you know, trudging through the mud. So, but it was interesting how that played out. The other thing I wanted to mention real quick is, you know, we were talking about we lost to Georgia Tech in the opening game, but we only lost one other game in the regular season this year. We end up going, I guess, 9-2 in an 11-game season. And that was the infamous LSU field goal game where we went down to Baton Rouge John Vaughn missed, what, five goals? Yeah. So this was that team. But it's also the team, do you remember what game this team had played the game before this Iron Bowl?
No.
The Georgia game, which was the last time we beat them in Athens.
The Aromashudu fumble.
Yes.
At the goal line that Courtney Taylor recovered.
That was the game before this, yeah.
Wow. That's dramatic.
So, I mean, think about it. We talk and talk and talk about the 2004 team, but the 2005 team had the LSU field goal game, the Georgia long pass on fourth down fumble, and then kick the field goal game, and then the honk if you sack Brody game. That's. I mean, there probably were others too. I'm just not thinking about. But that's three fairly notorious games, you know, for good or ill, in one season. That's interesting, I thought.
It is.
Yeah. So you want to dig into the game a little bit and talk about it?
Let's do it.
Well, the first quarter is going to take a little bit longer, and then we'll probably zip along better, more quickly through the remaining three because they're not near as interesting. But let me kind of give you the breakdown, and we can talk about it. So I like they made a point early on. This was on CBS with Vern and Todd Blackledge, that Vern made the point early on that every game, like the first 10 games of the season, Alabama had thrown a pass on first down and completed it. So on first down of this game, Croyle drops back to complete that 11th in a row pass, and we sack him for a 10-yard loss, Wayne Dickens. And let me just say, sacking Brody for a 10-yard loss on the first play of the game is definitely an omen of things to come, right? He might as well get ready because this is just we've got double digits still to go. So on third down, he is sacked again, this time by Quentin Groves. I'm going to keep you I gave you a running interception count last week. I'll give you a running sack count this week. So that's two. So they've tried two pass plays and gotten sacked both times. Then they get a delay of game. And so they punt to their own 40-yard line. Now, this is what I mean, John. We put them in a hole. They put themselves in a hole even worse in this game. And we start the game on their 40. I want to say that we only play, I think we only run one play on our own side of the 50-yard line until well into the second quarter of this game. Mm. That's insane.
That's a good way to do it.
That's insane. So Cox hits Slaughter for a nice gain to the 25. We're already in the red zone. And then there's a late hit on Cox. We get down to their 11. They noted the Alabama defense is giving up 9 points a game, and the offense is scoring 35. Auburn offense is scoring 35 points a game, so something had to give, and what had to give was the Alabama offensive line giving us short fields. It's hard to hold your opponent to 9 points a game when they're starting on your 40-yard line every possession. And so Cox hits Obamanu for a touchdown. It's 7-0 Auburn. We kick off to them. They're called for a face mask on the kickoff, so they start their own 8. This is in a minute. I'm going to have a stat for you on that. That's very funny. So we're stuffing them, and they punt, 23-yard punt. This time we start at the 32-yard line of Alabama. So we've started at their 40, and their 32. And so I love the camera now is showing Shula on the sideline, looking like the deer in the headlights. You know, he just looks like he doesn't know what's going on. I mean, you know, give Chizik credit. When Alabama was was carpet bombing us in 2010, Chizik always looked like he was in command. You know what I mean? He always looked like he was confident and like looking for the next opportunity. Shula's eyes are like dinner plates at this point already. So
he did not inspire fear as an Auburn fan.
No. So yeah, here's that stat. So far, with each team having the ball, well, they've had it twice. We've had it twice, and they've had it twice. Yeah, each team had the ball twice. Alabama's average starting position is their 13. Our average starting position is the Alabama 36. That's not good. Nice. That's not good. So Irons isn't getting much running the ball the entire game. He gets over 100 yards, but we have to just bang away with him to get him over 100 yards. So we get a good pass play to Courtney Taylor down. He drags three Alabama guys with him to the Alabama 8. Irons goes up the middle, and it's for a touchdown. It's 14-0. Now, this is a tricky one because it looked like Irons might have fumbled at the goal line. Did you catch this?
Yeah. They reviewed it. This is, again, we talked about the game last time when there was no review. There was
no review of this. Yeah.
But there was not a good angle. They didn't have enough cameras yet.
Yeah, that's right. So they gave him the touchdown. I'm like, okay, I'll take it. So it's 14-0. And then on the first play of the next drive, Alabama fumbles the exchange with the running back, and they were lucky to get it back, but they lost yards. Not only am I going to have running sack totals for you, and like I said, this quarter is going to run a little bit longer because so much happened. It'll go a lot faster after this. But I'm also going to have Brody Croyle's numbers for you as we go along in this game because they are very entertaining. Brody Croyle at this point, we're halfway through the first quarter. Brody Croyle is 1 for 3 for 1 yard with 2 sacks. And the Alabama total offense at this point is minus 15. Oh, if you like these kind of numbers, you're going to enjoy the rest of the show. All right, so he gets his 3rd sack. I didn't notice who it was. It was probably McClover. 3rd and 15, and so Bama's back to their 11. It's 4th and 23, so they punt. Now, this is where he actually gets a good punt off, and we have to start our 3rd possession at our own 45. This is like being backed up to the goal line compared to the rest of this game. We're at our own 45. We're like, maybe we should just quick kick on first down. I'm kind of nervous being on this side of the 50-yard line all of a sudden. It makes me nervous. So this is the only time, and we won't be back over there for a while. So there's 5 minutes and 40 seconds still to go in the first quarter. It's 14-0, and we're at our own 45. Tristan Davis makes an appearance at running back. Do you remember that guy?
Oh, yes. One of those guys, a message board favorite.
Yeah.
A great, He had that one great game against Kentucky. He was a great straight line runner. Yeah. And that Kentucky game, he had like 10 carries for 200 yards or something.
Something ridiculous, yeah.
And the rest of the season, he got nothing. And he didn't do anything in this game.
And he was playing mainly because Brad Lester was injured. It was, we kind of remember we in 05 and 06, we kind of had the Kenny Irons and Brad Lester 1-2 punch. Mm-hmm. Irons was, I think, a bit better, at least certainly more of a between the tackles guy. Lester was a little more of around the end, kind of more lanky, just a little bit. But Irons is more like the workhorse up the middle. And Irons ends up basically playing this whole game, so you don't really see anybody else much. So we run Ben Obamano on a reverse and score a touchdown. So now it's 21-0 with still about 5 minutes to go in the first quarter. Now, I made a note here as I was watching the game, and I'm going to revise it, okay? I at this point, I typed, it is an absolute crime that this is not the game where Auburn beat Alabama by the most points in the last 50 years. We should have won this game 65-0. Because you remember in the last how many ever decades, the biggest Auburn win was 2017. It's hard to imagine that a 26-14 game is our biggest win over Alabama. But 12 points is more than we beat them in the first time ever game. It's more than we beat them in this game. It's more than we beat them in any game going all the way back probably to the 60s or early 70s or something. And so at the most with Sullivan or something. So, but I'm gonna revise that statement now because I watched the other three quarters. And here, let's pause here for you and you answer me this question. As I was up to this point watching it, I'm like, Auburn should have beaten them 80-0. But when I look back now, I really feel like that first quarter was an aberration and not representative of the two teams. What do you think?
Well, I think we talk a lot on this podcast about how college football sometimes it's like a rock, paper, scissors thing.
Yeah.
We were a bad matchup for them. Our pass rushers against their offensive line was a bad matchup for them. But also, we had the game started perfectly for Auburn.
Yeah.
It started exactly how we needed it to start to have the best chance of success.
That's for sure.
The other thing I think we haven't talked about is I think, you know, Borges is still the offensive coordinator, and I think he came out with a really good plan against Alabama. He kept them off balance with the mix of run and pass. He was doing these things where he would bunch up the receivers and then they would come out and somebody would come open. And then again, this was, you know, a long time before college football's evolved to the point where it is now, but it was some really good stuff. And he was, you know, Alabama was honestly confused on defense a lot.
Yeah. It feels like after about midway through the second quarter, we kind of quit doing a lot of that stuff and got very vanilla. We almost looked like the A-Day offense after about the midpoint of the second quarter. And it may have been that Tuberville told Borges, just let's get closer to the vest, you know, let's just eat the game up and grind it out and run the. Because you could tell that we start basically playing the clock by halftime.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, at this point, Alabama has minus 25 total offense. And out of their three possessions so far, their best one was the one where they gained a yard. They actually gained 1 yard on one of those possessions. All right. So now they have it on their, I guess, 20 or whatever after we kick off. And on first down, Antarius Williams sacks Brody back to the Bama 15. That's the fourth sack overall, and Alabama now has minus 35 yards of offense. On second down, Croyl is sacked to the Alabama 7. This time it's T.J. Jackson, who was not really known for his sack work, but this is T.J.'s second sack, so I guess he got that first one. This is the fifth sack overall, and we're still in the first quarter. So Bama now has minus 43 yards of offense. Oh, my goodness. And here's old Trey Smith fair catching the punt. And so now we're going to start our fourth possession at the Alabama 41. Like I said, we were on our own 45 that one possession, and we wouldn't be back there again for a while. But you'd think, okay, this is where we punch it in and go ahead and score again. But no, we fumble, and Alabama recovers at their own 37. So it's like we gave away a chance to make this a little worse. And then old Terrence Trent Darby for Alabama has a big run to the Auburn side of the field, and that's going to end the first quarter. So Again, I've got running stats as we go along rather than quarter stats this game. But what are your thoughts so far that we haven't already mentioned on the first quarter before we get into the second and on?
I loved being there for this first quarter.
Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely, we were kicking their ass up and down the field. They couldn't stop our pass rush that depend on it, and we were going bonkers.
I was absolutely I guess so. It's this is 21-0 at this point, right? We already got our three.
Yep.
Okay. So this touchdown here is Alabama. That's what I wanted to. Okay. I had a note to remind myself that when we scored the second touchdown, I was dancing all around like, yeah, we're kicking Alabama's butt, yeah. And this little old man behind me in the stands or in front of me, whatever, he leans over and says, not so fast, it's not over yet. And then when we scored the third touchdown, and he goes, I think you can go ahead and celebrate now. When it was 21, he's like, yeah, I don't think they're coming back from this, so... Because it wasn't just that we were up that much. It was that up to this point, they didn't look like they were going to score in the game.
Yes.
But they put things together after our fumble, and they pass and run, and they get down to our one-yard line, and I guess Darby, or I think actually Croyle maybe dives in and punches it in. So it's 21-7, and then both teams trade punts, and then we trade punts again, or Alabama punts again. We kind of settle down. The second quarter becomes kind of a boring back-and-forth punting duel. At this point, I love this statistic that comes up. At this point in the game, Alabama had 34 total yards, so they've actually reversed all that negative from all the sacks now because of that one touchdown drive. Alabama has 34 total yards and 179 yards in punts. So that's about six times... or five times as many yards in punts as they do in offense. Kenny Irons at this point has carried the ball eight times for 21 yards. That's not really good, is it?
No, I mean, again, we've scored a bunch of points, but we haven't rolled up and down the field.
No.
We got the short field.
Yeah. Yeah, the short fields is the thing. It's keeping them from doing anything, and it's letting us punch it in. And it's funny because this is the symptom that really shows up big time in 06, the next year. You know, you and I have talked about this before. The 2006 team lost all these receivers except Courtney Taylor, and they lost when they had Kenny Irons and Brad Lester back, but they weren't quite. They were injured a lot, I want to say, in 06. And so the 06 offense was never as potent as the 04, 05 offenses were. And it seemed like in most of the games in 06, we played really good defense, and we would rely on the other team to fumble or throw an interception in their own red zone. And it seemed like half of our touchdowns against good teams in 06 were scored from like 20 yards out. So this, you kind of get a sense of that brewing in this game, I think, a little bit.
Yes.
So this is where Al Borges actually gets wiped out. There's a Jake Slaughter blocks an Alabama defensive player directly into Borges, and he gets knocked out. And they wake him up.
Maybe this is why the offense flattered. I haven't thought about it until you said this, but
This
is why the Auburn offense kind of goes in a shell, because Borges is a little out of it.
Borges, he starts calling UCLA plays. he's like, what was the UCLA quarterback?
Cade McCown.
Cade McCown. Yeah, Borges is like kind of his birds are flying around his head and stars. He's like, when Cox doesn't do what he wants, he's like, dang it, McCown, what are you doing out there? I told you, throw it to the guy in powder blue and gold, for crying out loud. So they slap him around, and he gets back up on his feet and continues, and we punt. So here's the thing. Now, we're well into the second quarter. And the rushing yards, Alabama 16, but most of that is the sacks on Croyle. Darby's actually looking very good in this game. I mean, if we hadn't put him in such a deep hole to begin with, I feel like that Darby would have been tearing us up a little bit. So they're in positive yards with 16 yards, and we only have 64, which doesn't seem like a whole lot. But the one thing we do have is we continue to sack Brody. We put a huge rush on Croyle and we sack him. This time it's Marquise Gunn because he hadn't gotten one yet, I guess. And so that's sack number six, 46 yards lost on sacks, and they punt again. We get a big run by Kenny Irons to midfield. We get a big pass to Anthony Mix to the 26. But then we get an illegal man downfield penalty and a sack on Cox. This is their one big sack on Brandon Cox to push us backwards. And then we have a big pass play to Courtney Taylor and a big pass down to Devin Romichadu. Man, we're using all those receivers here. This looks good. So Mix and Taylor and Romichadu all caught big passes on this drive down to the 5-yard line. And then Cox does a really good job where he play action hand fakes the ball to the right with irons. The whole Alabama defense flows in that direction following irons, and Cox just rolls out to his left, and Cole Bennett, the tight end, is wide open for the touchdown. So 28-7 Auburn, about two-thirds of the way through the second quarter. And at this point, so we're almost to halftime. I'll just finish up the half, and then we can kind of look at the first half. So 28-7 Auburn at this point. We're not going to score again in this game. Brandon Cox, 12 for 14 passing. That's not bad for about 150 yards. We get a seventh sack on Croyle. This time it's Stanley McClover again. And they keep showing that our defensive coordinator is David Gibbs. It's funny, we talk about David Gibbs being the kind of somewhat disappointing defensive coordinator this year, but you got to give him credit for putting together at least part of this game plan, right?
Sure. I'll give him credit for helping us get this, but on the ranking of Auburn defense coordinators, he's not way up there.
He was a one-hit wonder. So Alabama gets the ball back and they punt, or they after the sack, number seven, they punt. And I like it. They end up the second quarter with a really good David Housel quote where they're talking about I didn't mention this, right? I guess I did. They just did. This was the game where we christened it Pat Dye Field. This was the night where they named the field after Pat Dye, and he came out and they gave him a big plaque and everything. And they talked about how they showed David Housel, and they talk about how he said that when we used to have to play in Birmingham on a neutral field, Housel said that Birmingham was about as neutral in the Iron Bowl as the beaches of Normandy were on D-Day. That's pretty good.
I like it.
So that gets us to halftime, 28-7. Your thoughts so far?
Again, I love defense, and Auburn's defense has been just eating up Alabama. The offense has done enough. I think Borges called a great half, as I said. I think we kept them off balance, like that play you're talking about, you described well at the goal line. They really set Alabama up for that. And you're right, they have a lot of weapons on the receivers. They've been using them. But the biggest story, again, is just we have a good defensive line, and they're feasting on Alabama. And Alabama's kind of shell-shocked. I really think, and they talked about this in the broadcast, it's like Alabama didn't come out fully ready to play. And yeah. Auburn, and we this is one of the things that Tuberville gets credit for, is in games like this, Auburn was ready to play. And they were ready to play at a high level for the opening gun, and Alabama clearly was not.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah, some coaches are better than others at kind of getting your mind in the right place, I think, for a big game. And there's no doubt, as long as we weren't playing Arkansas, Tuberville was very good at motivating the team and kind of – because we've seen, clips of him in the locker room. I put some of them in We Believed where he's not like a huge fire and brimstone preacher of a coach, but he was really good at like – the thing I always appreciated about Tuberville and things like this is he was very good – at being in a way kind of calm, but he could also say things that would get you kind of fired up. He was very low key about it, like when one of my favorite ones is like at Tennessee where when we went up there in 2004, he says, this is a loud crowd, guys, but if you come out and play well, they will get quiet. And he said, it's not going to take a great one. It's going to take a good one, but we'll take a great one. He had a good way of turning phrases and kind of putting things in perspective that I always appreciated and thought was good. So let's see. I lost my place. I had an ant crawl across my desk here, and I kind of panicked for a second. All right, here we go. I was trying to kill him and not break my train of thought, and I got him. At halftime, they actually had Archie Manning in the studio. And I love how Manning says, if Alabama doesn't do better on the offensive line, he said, not only are they going to not get back in the game, they're going to get Brody killed. So here's your halftime stats. Alabama has 14 rushing yards, 29 passing yards, total yards of 43, or 1.4 yards per play.
Ouch.
Auburn has 67 rushing yards, which ain't great. 120 passing yards, total of 187, but that's 6.2 yards per play, which is okay. That's pretty good, right? And we have 7 sacks. So what do you think about those stats right quick?
I mean, I think it tells the story of the game, that we have really, really shut their offense down, prevented them from doing anything positive, and that we were good, but we weren't, like, incredible on offense, right? And well, it was mostly the passing game.
Yeah.
The iron weren't really taking over.
Well, I think that the interesting thing about Alabama's 14 rushing yards and 29 passing yards is that, and they have a touchdown. They had that one touchdown drive after we fumbled. And it's because if without that drive, how bad would those stats be? I mean, they'd be negative pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only reason that Alabama's statistics are in the positive at halftime are that they had one, you know, 70, 60, 70-yard drive. But if you take all those yards out, that's terrible. So they, that's why it's 28-7. I mean, I think it would have been 35-0 if we hadn't fumbled there. But anyway, not that we needed it. All right, so we'll get through the second half relatively quickly here. So we 3-and-out and punt. Alabama gets a really good return to our 34, and it looks like they're going to score a touchdown and get back in the game. That would have made it 28-14, and I'd start to get a little nervous. But Stanley McClover comes in for sack number 8 on 3rd and long and makes him have to kick a long field goal. So it's 28-10. And I have a note here. Alabama scoring drive covered 9 yards in 6 plays. Woo! If you're holding them to 9 yards in 6 plays, I think you're in good shape. All right, so Aroma Shadu takes the kickoff and bobbles it and ends up tackled on the 2-yard line. Kenny Irons almost gives up a safety. He gets to like the 1-inch line. This is another one of those where the replay, it looked like it was a safety, yeah. But
yes.
Yeah, I thought that's how I saw it, but they at least give an offside. In this game, Alabama could not do anything for themselves without shooting themselves in the foot the very next play. So that let us at least punt. And we punt out to the I had a note here that their punt looked like Mark Ingram's fumble in the 2010 Iron Bowl, where it was a short line drive punt, but it lands and just scoots along the sideline for all the way down to the Alabama 40. So it ends up being like a 59-yard punt just because it never goes out of bounds. It just rolls right down the sideline inbounds. So almost a huge sack. Croyle's able to throw it away. That would have been number 12. He's got 5 completions, 8 sacks, and 13 hurries at this point, and the yards per rush for Alabama is 1.1. McClover sacks him again. That's number 9. And this is the one where Alabama even substituted in a different offensive line player just to try to help, and McClover just shoves the guy out of the way and sacks Croyle. Oh, it was incredible. The guy, like, they, you know, when they snap the ball, the offensive lineman pops up and is ready to block, and McClover just treats him like a kindergarten kid standing there. He's like, excuse me, I need you to move out of the way. He just moves him over. Coming through, man. So I don't know if they went back to the original guy or just said, what difference does it make? They might as well, honestly. At this point, they might as well just double-team somebody else and not even have anybody over there because it's not doing any good. So Alabama punts, and we're at the 39, and it's our 3rd straight 3-and-out. We punt. We totally shut down the run on this series, and I keep thinking, I said here, why doesn't Alabama do a draw or a screen pass or a shovel pass? I mean, you know, part of the offensive line is having a good offensive line, but there's another part which is doing things to disguise and camouflage that. Do a draw play, do a screen pass, you know?
I mean, one of the reasons we got so many sacks is there was a lot of deep drop back passes.
Yeah, dude, I mean, if they had run the Clemson offense from 2010, where they just did nothing but slip screens and bubble screens, Alabama would have been in this game.
Mm-hmm.
They would have been in this game. Because remember we talked about Clemson came in that 2010 game. They knew that Nick Fairley was going to destroy them up the middle, so they didn't have Kyle Parker keep the ball more than 2 steps pretty much any play. He still got killed, but you know it would have been a lot worse. He'd have looked like Brody Croyle. So let's see, another, we're doing little things that are just kind of keeping Alabama in the periphery of this game. They punted to us, and Trey Smith fumbles the punt, but we recover it. Kenny Irons starts. They just start feeding Kenny Irons, and he gets to the other side of the field. Three tough runs for first down. So now we're finally keeping possession a little bit and running the clock. And so we finish off the third quarter up 28-10, and now we go into the fourth quarter. I'm just going to roll on ahead because there wasn't really much exciting in that quarter. So we're at the Alabama 30. This has been our only decent drive of the second half. It's 4th and 7 at the Alabama 29, and guess what John Vaughn does?
Shake.
Yeah, he hooks it to the left, misses a field goal. Again, if he had hit this field goal, this would have been the biggest, in terms of the difference in the score, this would have been the biggest Auburn win since like 1970 or something. If he makes this field goal, we win by 13, and that would have been more than the 2017-12. But we don't. So Alabama takes over at the 29. Croyle is now 5 for 12 for 29 yards. 23 rushing yards for Alabama. And we're in the fourth quarter, by the way. 74 total yards. Darby has 89 yards rushing. The rest of the team combined, minus 52. That sums it up pretty well. All right, sack number 10, T-Will, Travis Williams. Everybody's got to get a turn, right? It's like the water boy is like, coach, put me in. I want to sack Brody. So they punt to inside our 10-yard line. They have 10 sacks, 10 punts, and 10 penalties so far, Alabama.
The point I want to make here, again, with us taking over at the 10, we talked about the fumble and on the kickoff and us starting on the 2. In the second half, we had the bad starting position.
That's true. Yes. And our defense kept – the defense created the lead in the first quarter, and they preserved the lead in the second half. Is that fair?
Yes, that's fair.
So let's see. Yeah, we're leaning on Kenny Irons now. 25 carries for 96 yards. He's not even getting 4 yards a carry, but he's grinding it out and just doing his best to keep our defense off the field as much as possible. And he's getting every carry almost every play now. We punt to their 28, and Todd Blackledge says, Brody Croyle, you don't want to be remembered for a game like this. And I'm like, well, guess what, Brody? Guess what? They pass to our 36, and then Darby gets a short pass to our 26. And then DJ Hall, that their tight end, was very famous, got down to our 13. They have a pass play into our end zone that looks like a touchdown. And Jonathan Wilhite, I got to call his name, because he does a great job. He dives in front of the receiver and gets his hand on the ball and smacks it away like a volleyball player spiking the ball to keep Alabama from scoring here. But they're on our 8 now, and they have to run the ball. They have yet to run the ball in this drive. This has been all passes, and they haven't gotten sacked yet. But on 4th down, trying to score, guess what? It is sack number 11, and Terrius Williams all the way back to the 15, and we get the ball.
A huge play in the game.
Yeah, they're really keeping us in this game when the offense isn't. More irons. There's 2 minutes and 20 seconds to go now. We get up to the Auburn 46, and Alabama puts in fresh meat. I guess they decided that our defensive line was tired of sacking Brody, so John Parker Wilson gets to come in. He doesn't get sacked. He almost does. Alabama has a blatant hold on this play where McClover was all over Wilson, but they hold him, and so he doesn't get the sack. Mm-hmm. I'm like, at this point, I'm telling my offensive line, just hold. Right? I mean,
yes.
Anything's better than what's happening. Just hold. If they call it, they're not going to call it every play, surely. On the next play, they would have sacked John Parker Wilson, except that it was a false start on Alabama, so it was a dead play. So McClover's got 6 sacks, we're told. Wilson even throws the ball after he's gone past the line of scrimmage. So at this point, as we move toward the end, like a minute to go, they point out this Auburn team, 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005, has tied the record for the most wins in a 4-year period with the 1986 through 89 senior class. I guess that what happened was the 2001 team only went 7-5. And so they didn't give enough wins to the 04 senior class to make them the winningest tied, 4-year period. But the 02, 3, 4, 5 got 10 wins out of this team, I guess, right? And so they they end up tying that 86-89 team. Plus, the 04 team got to play in an extra game and win the SEC championship, too. So, okay, so Alabama, here's the last little bit. With 28 seconds to go, Alabama does a Hail Mary, and DJ Hall catches it at the one-yard line. The entire Auburn defense is there to knock the ball down, and he catches it at the one, and Wilson dives in for the touchdown, and Tuberville was not happy.
No, I forgot how mad this made me watching it again. It was kind of a bullshit play.
Well, I knew that it was 28-18, and I knew that they scored in the second half and got a two-point conversion. I just had forgotten it was in the last few seconds of the game. It was 28-10 with inside of a minute to go, and yes, they got that. So they got the two-point conversion.
It should have been 28-10.
Yeah. So 28-18, Tuberville's mad. This would have easily been the biggest Auburn win by points in decades. Instead, it's second to the 2017. It's tied with a bunch of other ones that we've beaten them by 10. Let's see. But we really didn't do much on offense in the second half. We didn't really try to, but I had a note. You don't want to be Curly Hallman either. You know, you don't want to start throwing the ball over the middle fourth quarter when you're only up 18 or whatever. And we almost gave them the onside kick. And the last thing I note, when Cox takes the knee, Tuberville is holding up the four fingers.
Nice.
All right. Well, there it is. What do you think?
I think Auburn jumped on them with both feet at the beginning of the game. And that was the story because we were up 21-0 there. And at the end of the game, they scored this kind of, you know, the clock's running out BS kind of Hail Mary touchdown.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, we were up 21-0. The game ended, you know, 28-18. In the second half, you're right. The Auburn offense didn't do anything. I was looking at our second half drive chart, and we had the ball outside of like the kneel down at the end of the game or whatever. We had the ball six times in the second half. Four of those, we went three plays and out. And one, there was a penalty, so we went four plays and out. But so only that one drive we missed the field goal did we get a first down and do anything.
Yeah.
The rest of them were basically nothing.
Crazy. Yeah.
Well, but that also just shows how the game could have gone if Alabama defense, you know, got us in bad field position and we couldn't do anything on offense. There was another path here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that this game, it's interesting. I can't think of any other Iron Bowl where it's two completely different outcomes could have happened. I could see you playing this exact game again and Alabama winning by double digits. But I could see you playing this game again and we win by the most in the series history, at least, you know, the last 50 years. So again, we were, you know, either if we make that field goal or if we knock down that Hail Mary pass, either way, this would have been the biggest win by Auburn in this series since at least 1971 or something. And instead, it's just another 10-point win like we do against them every so often. So, just really weird. Well, we have a few more things to say about it. We've got some questions and stuff. But first, we have to thank our patrons that make this kind of show possible. We wouldn't even be able to do this without these folks. And if you want to join their ranks and be part of the wacky crowd that keeps us on the air for this show and our others, go to www.auwishbone.com and just click the big orange button that says Become a Patron. When you go to www.auwishbone.com, you can also find, I've put them in one handy place, the first five episodes of We Believe, where we started back in 75 and working our way forward season by season of what it's like to be an Auburn fan with lots of interviews and game audio and stuff like that. I'm going to add, because I think we've gone ahead and released episode 7 now, so in the next day or two, when I get a chance, it's on the other computer that I have all this stuff. I'm going to go in and add game 6 and 7 to that page. So the first 7 episodes of We Believe will be on auwishbone.com. I mean, they're in our podcast feed anyway, but I like to have them all in one place where people can easily get to them. So if you want to join the fun, get early advance access to stuff like We Believed, and get discounts on things and all that, go to www.auwishbone.com. Here are our current patrons. We've got Matthew Flowers, Carl Von Drunker, Samuel Salvatore, and Christopher Burleson. Then there's Phil Amthor, Ben Spooner, Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, William Glenn Matthews, Gary Grant, Brian Gray, Willie Carden, Tom Anderson, Susan Trawick, Logan Chilton, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens, William Morgan, Emmanuel Seaman, W.D.E. Ritchie, Winston Boddy, Clinton and Christopher Stewart, Mickey B., Phil Davis, Joshua Corbett, John Otsuki, Preston Settle, Daniel Odom, A.U. Falling Up, Alchemist, Kevin Smith, Clarence Alford, Will Summerford, David Hegler, Johnny Caldwell, Theodore Gary Reynolds, Wolf, Joel Beckham, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kanjian, Catherine England, George Gaston, John McCune, David Evers, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Rob Morgan, Blake Heron, Hugh Anderson, Stephen Houston, Cato the Barner, Danny Flack, Papa Todd, Russell Milling, Kevin Kenoy, Don Zederman, Ross, Lane Middleton, Shannon Butson, Randall Walker, Shane Bailey, Chris Thrash, Tony Perry, Alex Wynn, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, and C.T. Wayne. And finally, Jeremy Minton, Wardam Wade, Spanky, J.W. Rice, Jason Albrick, Nick Vizicana, Russell Souther, Paul Bankson, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Kevin Mahan, Stephen Wyatt, Trevor Johnson, Auburn Elvis, Robert Drain, Brandon Smith, Royce Alvarez, Thomas Brinson, David Smiley, Matthew Wagstaff, Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, Darren Pyle, Chris Camo, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, plus Chris Brent Rumble, and our one-time and anonymous donors. We thank all of you so, so very much. www.auwishbone.com. Join the fun. All right, in our last little bit here, you had a note about impacting the game on the team going forward, and I want to get your thoughts on that. I would just say that I think that, as we mentioned before, you could see that against good defenses we were going to struggle on offense, especially when we lose all those receivers in 06. That's the main thing. And we lose Stanley McClover. He goes to the NFL after one season. We lose some other, like T.J. Jackson. So we're much more depleted, I would argue, after 05 than we were after 06. And yet the 06 team ends up having a really good year. So what are your thoughts there?
I think the other thing is, in terms of expectations, just that we could do this to Alabama on a regular basis.
Yeah.
I think Tucker kind of establishing dominance in the series. But you're right that, you know, we had the great season in 04. We had a really good season in 05. But, you know, the team was clearly turning into something different after that, right?
Yeah,
the receivers were a huge loss after this.
Mm-hmm. This was, I think I said, this was Mike Shula's third year of four that he would get. And, of course, he goes 0-4 against us. And, you know, Tuberville's streak of six, the first one was against Francione and the last one was against Saban. It was just those middle four that were against Shula, who was kind of his Bill Curry to Pat Dye, you know. So it was a different era, and it was really fun to be in the stadium that night and see Pat Dye Field painted on the field, and the Alabama fans were just in misery in the first quarter. They must have looked like we must have looked in 2010, you know, like this is going nowhere in a big hurry. At least Cam wasn't getting sacked 11 times in that game, but it didn't look good, so... Well, let's see. Do we have any listener questions or comments about the game?
We have one email about the game. This is from Matt Morton, mm-hmm. who says, "Hey, guys, I really appreciate you doing these recaps of old games to bring back a flood of memories." He says, "One specific memory I have of this game was the way Auburn gave up the two touchdowns to Alabama. One was from a fumble, mm-hmm. I believe, that gave them the ball deep in our territory. The other was a last-minute drive where Auburn was basically playing prevent defense."
Yeah.
And I want to pause in Matt's email and say he's 100% right. It makes me think, like, a game should have been 28-3.
Mm-hmm.
He says, "I wanted so badly to beat them by more than two touchdowns, especially since all year I had heard how Bama was back. But the sack fest was spectacular, watching the Bama O-line just look at each other with the deer in the headlights look was unforgettable. Again, thank you guys for all the hard work you do in putting this podcast together. War Eagle, Matt Ward.
War Eagle, and we appreciate that. I will say, not to toot our horn, but just in appreciation that at least, you know, people seem to be enjoying this, that you have, you know, we have gotten several messages and tweets and emails and stuff over the last couple of weeks that people like it. So,
yeah, no, I think it's fun. And I think it's fun. I've enjoyed going back and watching these games again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and shout out to Will Collier, because
thank you, Will.
Yeah, when we started doing this, and he pointed out that he was able to lend us the 05, he was able to lend us the 05 Alabama game recording so that we could watch it, because it's not on YouTube. There's like a 10-minute highlight package on YouTube, but he had the whole game. So appreciate that, Will. All right. Well, you like to ask for recommendations, right?
Yes. So if you have a game that you want us to do this for, an Auburn game, you know, basically from, we have to be, again, as Van said, we have to be able to get on a video, but pre-2012 and, you know, from the 80s or later, we're here. We'd like to do it. Send us your suggestions and we'll take a look and give it a shot. We have a couple of other ideas, but I'm excited to think about some games that other people are interested in.
Yeah, give us some ideas maybe we hadn't thought of. I've enjoyed all three of these so far just because it has been fun to kind of watch them analytically and take notes, but it's also been interesting to me in all three of them, particularly the last two, LSU interception game and this one, it's been interesting to me to realize that the highlight packages distort the game more than you realize.
Yes.
And that you forget how the actual flow of the game goes. And by having to sit there and watch the entire game, every one of these, it brings back that the game, actually watching the game in real time, is a very different game maybe than the one you've kind of been remembering all this time because of watching the highlights. You know what I mean? Like, we watch the game once, and then we just see those highlight reels over and over and over for years, and you start thinking of the highlight reel rather than the actual game. So I remember last week I was saying how startled I was by the first half of the interception game, that it was so close. And I was startled by how close the second half was in this game. So it is interesting. So I'm sure that, you know, there's a couple of games out there that kind of recommend themselves. But some of them are just kind of trite and too easy. And I'm curious to hear some. As long as they're fun, you know, as long as they're games that you guys would enjoy us breaking down like this. So, like the 3-2 game.
I'm not dying to go back and talk about like the 2002 Georgia Tech game.
All right. Well, I guess we'll hear from folks and we'll see what comes up. So, just a quick housekeeping note. We are, I'm about 3/4 of the way through editing the next episode of We Believed. It will cover the Chizik era, where I'm pouring most of my effort, obviously, into 2010. I think the 2012 part of that show is going to be about 5 minutes long, if that. But 2010 will be a fun trip, I promise. I'm getting lots of good stuff. There's just so much to use, man. I think I have 3 different sets of audio clips just from the Arkansas game that year that I've already put in. So,
somebody was talking about that game this week. That may be a game we need to do.
That may be. That was an interesting. That, I tell you what, there's certainly going to be. There certainly would be plenty to write down about it. It's not boring. Yeah, I want to suggest. I definitely want to put a flag on that one. If we don't do it next week, we need to do it soon.
I like it.
All right. But yeah. So and meanwhile, we've been working on our written version. I haven't really talked about that much, but just real quick, that we're working on a written version of We Believe, which will not be a complete rehash of the audio. It will be new stuff. Right? I mean, it's based on our conversations, but it's got a lot of new stuff. Instead of like the audio clips, we're replacing it with stuff like quotes from newspapers and Sports Illustrated and ESPN and stuff like that. So hopefully everybody will enjoy that when it comes along, probably in a few months. We're about 3/5 of the way through the first volume now. It's going to be multi-volume. It has to be. It's too long. Any final thoughts, John?
No, other than, you know, hey, honk if you sack Brody.
Honk if you sack Brody, man. All right, our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com.
For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at AU Wishbone and at facebook.com/AU Wishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.